And then you talked a little bit about the pressures that you face globally, and I mean, I don't know if that's only, can you talk a little bit more about that? I know you had touched on the labor, but...
Certainly. I mean, obviously our global competitors are becoming much more efficient. The technology and education that they have is growing exponentially. We see it specifically in the chili industry, and you have people always have assumed that Mexico was kind of our main competitor, but actually Mexico's under pressure from South American countries and Eastern Asian countries, and the cost that they have to pay. You know, we talked about labor a little bit earlier. When Mexico's paying, you know, we're paying $50 or $60 a day to a field laborer. Mexico's paying $17 a day, but you get into Central and South America, they're paying $3 or $4 a day, and you get into China, they're paying $1.50, $2 a day. So that kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Anything that is very labor intensive, us trying to compete in a cost market like that makes it very difficult. You know, and then you got other things like same issue with cotton production here. The biggest majority of our cotton now is going, is being exported. Most of it going to China as well. Textile mills, those types of things over there are growing astronomically. The global effect of mostly labor issues is going to play a part in what we do long term. On the other hand, you know, we have a lot of interaction with Mexico, and we have with NAFTA, even though the chili industry had some issues with Mexico, because not necessarily issues, but they had a competitive advantage of us because of low labor costs. But grain producers had an open market and a new market to be able to ship grain into Mexico, for example. And being this close to the border, we also saw Washington apples were taking apple growers out of Mexico or make it very difficult for them to compete. So I think we have to get used to the fact that that we're going to be living in a global economy. It's going to make some adjustments to what we do. I think the big part for us is to make sure that we have that agriculture isn't just kind of left to work on their own. Hopefully our elected officials and the public as a whole understand those issues and are committed to maybe keeping us at least a certain part of agriculture here domestically. And hopefully with their commitment, we can still compete extensively. We've been growing chili in this valley for years, and we've actually tried to grow for our processing facility in different locations in Mexico. There's nobody that can compete with us from a pure production standpoint, up to the point that we actually harvest a crop or expose or need hand labor to harvest it. We're the best in the world by far in this valley, and I'm sure that goes for a lot of other crops. It's just going to be a matter of you know, how committed we are to keeping those things here, and if that commitment will overcome some of the pressures that we have from other countries.
Are there small farms that continue in the area?
There are. There are some smaller farmers. I think we see agriculture going one of two ways. We see the big commodity guys, and this is more of a domestic view of it, but the bigger commodity guys are getting bigger. If you were a 1,000-acre farmer, corn farmer 15 years ago, you're probably a 1,500 or 2,000-acre corn farmer today, if you're surviving. Then we're also seeing some of the specialty crop guys. They're staying small, but they can compete because they have a specialty item and they do it very well. Organics would kind of fall into that. Some of the specialty crops, even, you know, chili peppers and onions for us would be considered specialty crops. Pecans probably as well. The pecan growers, part of the reason that it's grown in this valley, they've taken a lot of market share from places like Georgia and South Texas and Louisiana. Partly because of our climate, but partly because they're just better at it. Mm-hmm. And so, that I think you're going to kind of see that you're going to, people are going to have either a niche crop, as I mentioned, or you're going to have the really big crop where volume matters. The middle guys are kind of the ones that are getting squeezed out of it.
Okay. And what about genetically engineered seeds? Is that an issue at all for chili growers?
It's not per se today, even though I think it is moving forward. And again, I think it kind of falls back to some misconceptions that are out there about genetically modified crops. I think when anytime we hear genetically modified, we always assume bad. It's the first thing that comes to our thought process. But I don't know that that's necessarily true, and hopefully education over a period of time will allow us to do some things with genetic engineering that we're not doing today.
Okay.
For example, most genetically, we grow some genetically modified cotton, and we grow some corn, mostly for silage. The pesticide usage or chemical usage that we have on those two crops is significantly less than it was 10 years ago. So we're actually, I think, in many cases, actually helping environmental issues when we use genetically engineered or genetically modified crops.
But don't you still have to use, even if it's lowered, don't you still have to use some?
It depends on what genetic engineering, for the most part, what most growers are using right now with genetic engineering is one or two things. Number one is a Roundup Ready crop, corn or cotton, where instead of having to weed by hand or through cultivation, you can spray Roundup over the top of it that doesn't kill the plant that it's in, the corn or cotton, but is killing the weeds that surround it, limiting the amount of labor that it takes to kind of keep those crops weed free. The other one would be a pest inhibitor crop, boll weevil for cotton or boll worm. And so where we had to spray, we might spray 3, 4, 5 times a year for boll worm. Currently, we're not spraying really at all for that pest. So you could still use some. I mean, we talk crop improvement chemicals are available for a lot of different things. But we usually talk about crop improvement chemicals in a pound of active ingredient terms. And our numbers are significantly less than they were, like I said, 10 years ago. So I think that in that instance is very helpful to us. I think we have, from our own standpoint, we're hoping that at least some research will be done on genetically engineered or genetically modified chili peppers to give us some opportunities to, again, compete in some of our global areas. So not to say that's going to happen tomorrow, not to say that we're going to adapt them once they become available, but I think we want the research there so that we understand it and understand how it works. And, you know, if need be, we can go forward with it. There's a lot of concern that that genetically modified crops provide health risks, but I don't think that. I think that's more conjecture rather than having any scientific fact kind of behind it.
What about, like, traditionally, did you all save your chili seeds to regrow them?
Yes and no. It depends on what the chili industry is really divided into 3 or 4 different categories. The traditional one everybody knows about, the New Mexico Red or New Mexico Green, makes the red enchilada sauce or the green for chili rellenos or salsas. Those were developed here in the state. They're what we could call an open pollinated seed, and a lot of those seeds were kept and replanted and used over again. As you get into some of the more specialized varieties like jalapenos and habaneros and those types of things, a lot of those seeds, there's not a whole lot of open pollinated seed available. Most of those are what we would call a hybrid, and a hybrid would be It's basically not taking, you're not using a natural pollination process, you're actually using a forced pollination process. And that's the way a hybrid is created. And a lot of, like I said, the specialty peppers have been using hybrids for 10, 15, 20 years. Once the hybrid is created, the seeds that you take from those, you won't necessarily get the same plant again if you were to take seeds from those peppers. So to answer your question, yes and no. And there still is a lot of seed that has been used in the traditional red and green, New Mexico red and green, that we use in the seed over and over again. But in other commodities, as I mentioned, the jalapenos, cayennes, bell peppers, those types of things, using more of a hybrid seed.
Okay. And so, but with genetically engineered seeds, I mean, those are normally hybrid seeds, and can they be saved?
Well, the genetic engineering is actually, what you're actually doing is you're taking the pollination process in a hybrid is actually forced. You would, the way that I've actually been to a place in Mexico where they actually do it, they will take the pollen, for example, out of one chili pepper plant or flower, and they will take that and it looks like a little powder, and they would put that on a flower of I guess the male and female parts of a plant, and you'll come together and create a hybrid. In genetic engineering, what you're doing is you're taking maybe a characteristic of that pollen, if you will, the DNA, a particular characteristic, and putting it into another plant. And the way I'm stating it is a lot simpler than it actually is, because not every plant's going to accept. It's like taking a kidney out of one person and put it in another person. The body will a lot of times reject it. Same thing with genetic engineering. If you take a characteristic of one plant and try and put it in another plant, 9 times out of 10, that plant's going to reject it. It will not take it. So that whole process is very extensive, and there's a lot of research that has to go about in trying to develop those things. And so, yes, to answer your question, it is similar, and hybrids actually in some ways could be considered the first genetically modified plants. But our current science actually takes that kind of to a new level.
Okay. And you can save those seeds?
No.
Okay.
Oh, well, you can't save the seeds out of a hybrid, but you can save the seeds out of a genetically modified crop to an extent. It's a little more complicated than that, but yes, you can save those seeds. The hybrid seed, what happens on a hybrid is when you do that forced marriage, if you will, the plants or the product that is produced out of that, you will have, if you will, four different seeds. For every four seeds, you're going to have one seed that's the female plant characteristics. You have one seed that's the male plant characteristics, and then you would have two that would be the hybrid seed characteristics. So you can take the seeds from them, but when you actually grow them out, you're not going to get a true hybrid again. It'll kind of be lost at that point.
Okay.
I don't know if that would confuse the heck out of everybody, but.
Hopefully I do edit all of these things.
No, well, so good, thank God.
Yeah, to try to shorten things and bring the, yeah. Okay, so I have really one more question in English and then in Spanish, and then if there's anything else that you want to say, then you're welcome to say it.
Okay.
I'm trying to make the connection between land and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm asking people, you know, is there anything, like any expression of the land or... you know, the land that you, or agriculture, that you see in culture, in your, you know, in everyday culture, like the best example that I can think of is the Cambalache, the harvest trade, or harvest fair and the harvest trades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an event in the fall, and it's, you know, a fiesta, and, you know, it's just the whole community gets together. And so that's something that's ingrained into different communities. Into the culture. So is there anything that you can think of that, and it may not be that blatant, you know, but just, you know, any part of agriculture or land that you can see in culture?
Well, the simple answer to that is that we see it every day. I mean, and sometimes we take it for granted. You know, typical chili planting starts on San Jose's feast day. Typically, Thanksgiving is the traditional time that you take corn husks and make tamales.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you go to a restaurant at lunchtime, you know, the whole red and green idea, the chile, which one do you prefer? So we see a lot of those cultural things in our day-to-day lives. First of August, the first part of August when school starts, traditionally for us was always the first day of harvest and the chili crop. Almost the day that school started was always, you know, which was ever early to mid-August. It seemed like that's when the chili crop came to pass. And, there was always an excitement in our family. When we're getting ready to go to school, my parents are always getting ready to start the harvest of chile. So it's a very active, exciting time in our lives. I think, you know, I always relate things in the calendar to kind of the way things work in agriculture, and those dates, and I'm struggling a little bit on trying to find out in my mind which kind of fit, but you know, all the way through, we used to grow a lot of cantaloupes in this valley, not to the extent that we don't do it anymore up that way. It's all little kind of garden crops, but at one time we were growing cantaloupes here and actually shipping them by rail car out of this valley. And the 4th of July always signaled the beginning of cantaloupe harvest season. We have all those types of things. Our operation or our business, we make commitments to our customers to deliver a certain amount of crop or a certain amount of product to them on an annual basis. And so we start at the beginning of August with harvest and continue on through the through October. My daughter was born on October 13th. So I still, in my mind, traditionally think of October 13th as the day that I should have my contracts completed or I should have all my commitments done. That's kind of the date that resonates in my mind. It's part of it is that our operation, we have to complete everything that we need to have done by the time it freezes. And down here, anytime after about October 10th, and sometimes as late as Thanksgiving, we could have a freeze. And so we always kind of shoot for that mid-October date as far as that goes. I'm trying to think of something culturally, still in Mesilla. If you go to church in Mesilla, or if you go to the Catholic Church here in La Mesa, they have the blessing of the soil. They still have the traditional Sunday where they bless the soil, and the priests will actually go out to farms and bless the soil, those types of things. A traditional one, my mom still... the people that are Catholic out there understand this just because we pass, but Palm Sunday, where they hand out palmas or palms to people as they come into Mass to symbolize the journey of Jesus Christ. Those palms are, my mom keeps them in different locations throughout the house. Anytime we see a dark cloud in the summertime, which we think can be hailstorm clouds, which are a disaster for agriculture, my mom will traditionally gather up all those palms and burn a little fire in the backyard. And tradition, again, will state that that's going to ward off the evil spirits of the hailstorm. We do a lot of work with people in Mexico. They still work on the moon, the different stages of the moon. You know, La Luna, it will dictate if it's windy and a new moon, then traditionally it's going to be windy that entire month, probably not a good time to plant. If it's rainy at the time of a new moon, it's going to be rainy that whole month, maybe a good time to plant. So a lot of those things still play a part in what we do. What we do on a daily basis. I don't know, that's what you're looking for.
No, yeah, that's perfect. That is the best. Yeah, it's been really hard for people to answer, and that's, like, very clear. So yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. I guess I wanted to ask you in Spanish a question or two, and then just if there's anything else that you want to say. So, si me puede decir, para introducirle y su operación aquí.
Mi nombre es Dino Cervantes. Soy el manejador de Cervantes Enterprises acá en Valle Nuevo México. Somos un procesor de chile tipo Louisiana. Nosotros somos rancheros también, agricultores. Traemos el chile de nuestros campos y los procesamos aquí en un salsa, como te digo, tipo Louisiana.
¿Y puede describir o explicar las problemas o las cosas que están pasando con el agua? Y nada más, sí, con el agua.
Pues hay muchos problemas con el agua. El mayor problema realmente es que ahorita, bueno, agricultores... han tenido el agua desde antes, desde nuestros papás. Hemos usado el agua para nuestra agricultura. en la siembra, en el riego. Y ya que las ciudades están creciendo más y más y gente está entrando a la área acá del sur de Nuevo México o al norte de México, esa gente necesita más y más agua para lo que están haciendo ellos. Y ellos están queriendo que la agricultura nos suelta el agua de nosotros para el uso de ellos. Y realmente lo como vemos de un agricultor, nuestra vista es que podemos ayudar a esa gente y venderles agua. Pero históricamente ese agua es de nosotros. Y si lo vamos a soltar a la gente para crecer el comercial o la ciudad, vamos a tener que vender lo que es nuestro agricultura a la tierra que es de agricultura. Y por esa razón, si lo vamos a soltar a ellos, lo queremos vender en lugar de tener el gobierno que nos forza a dárselos gratis. Y realmente ese es donde andamos batallando. El gobierno quiere que nomás nos suelte el agua. Y nosotros, como te digo, es algo que nosotros vemos que hemos invertido nuestra vida en lo que es agricultura, y nomás para querer que nosotros lo soltamos, no es justo.
Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about in English or Spanish, whichever?
I don't know. I think we covered about everything, unless you have anything specific that I missed or didn't get. So
I think that's perfect. Thank you very much.
You bet.